Greetings, Sun Sounds listeners, and welcome to the Philosopher Program. This is your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader Candy Lewis, along with her co-host, Kitty Bullet Lewis. We begin our program with some selections from Science of Mind Guide for Spiritual Living. The Forest Awaits. Again, this was a month and a week with Earth Day and Arbor Day, and the theme has been fertilizing our future. The Forest Awaits. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now, attributed as a Chinese proverb. Every tree, every planet is an outpicturing of spirit. Ernest Holmes, The Science of Mind, page 90. Trees are sacred symbols of life, strength, and connection. They sequester carbon, provide habitat, and anchor ecosystems. Planting trees or protecting forests is a profound act of hope. Each tree represents a promise to future generations, a gift of life and balance. According to American Forests, trees are more than something pretty to look at or sit under. They are essential, much like schools and sewer lines. They improve our lives by absorbing harmful greenhouse gas emissions, providing shade that lowers the chance of illness or death related to heat, blocking wind so utility bills are lower during the winter, and creating job opportunities. But the organization adds, a map of tree cover is too often a map of income and race, especially in cities. That's because trees are often sparse in socioeconomically disadvantaged urban neighborhoods and some neighborhoods of color. The inequitable distribution of trees exacerbates social inequities. American Forests has led the tree equity movement through local and policy efforts, including securing billions of dollars for this work through the Inflation Reduction Act. Since 2023, American Forests signed major agreements to appropriate those funds in partnership with agencies across the federal government. Today, find time to honor the trees around you. Plant one if you can, or simply appreciate their beauty and role in sustaining life. Remember, the forest awaits. Affirmation. I honor trees as sacred expressions of spirit and guardians of balance. And also, from this month's Science of Mind, a prayer. We don't always share this, but this is about living in God's spirits, the universe's bounty. I am immersed in the invigorating, energetic presence of life that expresses itself through, in, and around me. Wherever I go and wherever I am, it is evident that life magnifies and regenerates through me. My daily mission is to bring the presence and bountifulness of life to every situation and circumstance. With life as my cause, love is my existence. I go beyond declaring that there is one life, and that life is God, Spirit, the universe, to seeing this life expressed infinitely in all things. As I decree the infinite life of God, of Spirit, of the universe, I experience the unlimited aspects of God in everything. It is magnified in, through, and around me, and within all living things. I challenge myself to seek manifestations beyond what my mind knows and deepen my heart to receive what the soul envisions. The I am within me identifies and recognizes the I am within everything. As I live from this space, my vibrational frequency increases and my distractions decrease. The very nature of this prayer resurrects and uplifts me. Living in God's spirits, the universe's bounty, awakens me to draw from all the resources available to me on this planet I call home. I open my heart to the East, filled with new beginnings and new births. I allow the element of air to impact every encounter of my day, for the rising sun has the capacity to rise within me on a continuous basis. I am self-actualized and filled with self-esteem as I draw from this illuminating power. I draw from the endless fire of the South, forever giving of itself as I create and walk on the path of my faith. The fire within me is my strength and resource as I live on purpose and honor the very nature that enables me to exist. I connect to the water of the West, relaxing my spirit, for I believe in the flow of my good. Just as this infinite life is flowing all around me, my eyes and heart witness and participate in the miracles flowing to me. I am grounded on the platform of Mother Earth, honoring the North as I realize and value the true meaning of my sacredness and the power of my creation. As I hold these words to be law in my life, the law consistently working in my life is an ongoing new birth and birthright. I am life. I am infinite life. I am fully here. And so it is. And this was from Reverend Dr. Temple Hayes, who served 3 years of military service in the United States Army Reserves and became a Centers for Spiritual Living minister in 1991 and an ordained Unity minister in 2007. And from the Daily Word, published by Unity, World Peace. I help create a world of peace. A simple image comes to mind when contemplating peace, that of the easy harmony in a world where friendship and love define everyday life. The world's people may not always agree. Even Jesus' disciples argued. The Apostle Paul got into squabbles everywhere he went. The solution? Respect differences, celebrate the diversity of humanity, and learn to respond instead of react. If friends and family bicker and make up, so can neighbors and nations. I endeavor to be a presence of peace wherever I go, and I trust others around the world feel the same way. In prayer, I envision people living contentedly and harmoniously. I join my prayer with those of others holding the same vision. Together, we are creating heaven on earth. Spiritual living is my path to freedom. Looking back over the years, I remember the ways I have felt far less than free. Maybe I felt limited because of my background or personal history, my education or career, or because of things others believed about me. Without even realizing, I may have taken on a limited view of myself and what was possible for my life. But discovering the truth of myself as a spiritual being, a beloved child of God, of spirit, of the universe, has healed my heart and freed my soul. My life circumstances are only part of my story. I am so much more than the sum total of my experiences. My freedom lies in God, in the spirit, in the universe, and in my understanding of myself as divine. As I grow in confidence, realizing I can change my life through the power of my thoughts, I grow more free. And from Mark Nepos, The Book of Awakening, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have, The Courage to Join. The real story comes from a love source that cannot be understood with intellect, but known only as a person is known. Coleman Barks. Living in modern times has turned us into watchers, placing a sliver of distance between us and everything we meet. It is this watching that disheartens our days, that takes the color out of the earth and makes the songs of time sound flat. The Native American view on this is healing. With respect for all aspects of creation, we are asked to honor whatever we see, rock, rain, fence, or stranger, as a member of our family. By honoring all things as living, the courage to join with the universe becomes a manner of being that can happen even while sitting still. In knowing the world this way, there is no such thing as metaphor. The wind is not like God's voice. The wind is God's spirit's, the universe's voice. Memories are not images of loved ones returning to us. They are the spirits of loved ones visiting us. It takes courage to remove the sliver of distance we carry around our necks, but the reward is a world alive and not dead. Such courage lets the juices of the world flow. Sit quietly and center yourself. After a time, imagine that the things about you, window, tree, rug, bed, door, are alive in the way that plants are alive. As you breathe, feel their energies breathe. Through your heart's beating, take the chance to welcome them. We return to Science of Mind for Reverend Dr. Sonia Cantrell Smith's monthly column, Sacred Activism, Sacred Engagement, The Seeds of Change. Spring awakens the world around us and reminds us of the intricate relationship between preparation and growth. Our April theme, Fertilizing Our Future, invites us to embody this rhythm spiritually and practically in our individual lives and in our collective actions. Nurturing the seeds of change and cultivating the conditions for a thriving future are the essence of sacred engagement. Some may not fully connect with the term sacred activism because they may associate it with specific forms of action that might not align with their personal understanding of spiritual practice. While activism is deeply valuable, its traditional framing may not fully resonate with everyone, especially those who prioritize contemplation or spiritual practices as their primary mode of engagement. To bridge this understanding, I use the term sacred engagement. Grounded in spiritual principles, this emphasizes an inclusive, holistic approach to participating in the world. Engagement suggests involvement, connection, and action, but it also leaves room for diverse expressions, whether through acts of service, of advocacy, or simply showing up with love and intention in our daily interactions. Ernest Holmes wrote, "Thoughts of lack, limitation, or fear must be uprooted and replaced by thoughts of hope, courage, and faith." This principle applies not only to the soil of our minds, but also to the broader landscape of society. Sacred engagement is the intentional blending of spiritual principles with concrete actions to create a world rooted in love, equity, and justice. It is not enough to meditate on a better tomorrow. We must also till the soil of today through acts of service, advocacy, and transformation, cultivating change in the world. One powerful example of sacred engagement is the work of urban gardens and community farming initiatives. Across the globe, individuals and organizations transform neglected land into thriving gardens, thereby feeding communities, building relationships, and restoring ecosystems. For example, Ron Finley, known as the Gangsta Gardener, began planting fruits and vegetables in vacant lots and along sidewalks in South Central Los Angeles. His efforts inspired a movement of grassroots food justice, empowering communities to reclaim their agency and reconnect with the earth. Finley's philosophy aligns with New Thought principles. Through intentional action, we transmute what seems barren into spaces of possibility. His work reflects Holmes's assertion that we must consciously know there is nothing to fear. We must know the spirit is all power, all presence, all good. By facing systemic inequities and environmental challenges with creativity and courage, we co-create solutions that serve the greater good, rooting ourselves in action. Closer to home, inspired action might look like organizing donation drives, supporting housing initiatives, or volunteering with educational programs. The Centers for Spiritual Living Community, for example, supports the Season for Nonviolence, an annual campaign inspired by Mahatma Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., which focuses on cultivating peace through everyday actions. This campaign exemplifies how spiritual principles can guide collective efforts to fertilize a future grounded in equity, compassion, and love. Sacred engagement begins with inner work, nurturing our consciousness through spiritual practice so we may show up with clarity, strength, and intention. As Thich Nhat Hanh reminded us, peace is every step. The shining red sun is my heart. Each flower smiles with me. How green, how fresh all that grows. How cool the wind. Peace is every step. It turns the endless path to joy. This wisdom encourages us to see every small act of mindfulness and care as a contribution to a larger, transformative whole. As we step into this month, let us commit to being gardeners of the seen and unseen by fertilizing our inner soil with faith, hope, and love, and by tending the outer world with action, we create a flourishing future. Share your story. Let's amplify our impact by sharing our stories. We invite all CSL communities to share what you're doing to engage in the world. Whether it's innovative programs, outreach efforts, or transformative events, your contributions inspire and empower others in our global community. Let us know how you're contributing to a world that works for everyone so we can share your story with others. Together, we rise higher and grow deeper, knowing our inspired action not only changes the world, it also transforms us. We turn now to the March-April 2025 issue of Spirituality and Health, a Unity publication, and an article by Annie L. Scholl, Bright Lights. Sri Kumar Rao brings ancient spiritual teachings to businesses. When Sri Kumar Rao, the son of a highly spiritual mother, was growing up in India and Burma, now Myanmar, it wasn't unusual for people like the late Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the creator of transcendental meditation, to visit his home. This was before he was discovered by the Beatles and actor Mia Farrow, so he was not a global celebrity, says Rao, now 73. He was just a guy who had wandered off the mountains, but his spiritual presence was very strong. Many disciples of the direct disciples of the Indian Hindu mystic Ramakrishna were also regular visitors to his home. I didn't understand their spiritual power. They were just like uncle figures who patted me on the head and gave me sweets, Rao says. At a young age, Rao also discovered the book A Search in Secret India by the late Paul Brunton, a British philosopher who left his career as a journalist to live among yogis, mystics, and holy men to study Eastern and Western esoteric teachings. As it did for people in the West, Brunton's book introduced Rao to Ramana Maharshi, the well-known Indian sage. I was strongly attracted to Ramana Maharshi, and I've since become more and more drawn to his teachings, Rao says. He has been the greatest single influence on my life. Much of what he taught has moved from intellectual understanding to visceral reality. Those teachings, combined with the presence of the spiritual giants he met as a child, rubbed off on Rao. He brings all of what he's learned to the Rao Institute, where he helps executives, entrepreneurs, and professionals all over the world discover their true purpose, overcome obstacles, and plug into their hardwired happiness. Rao works one-on-one with people, holds workshops, leads group programs, gives talks, and offers programs online. "I'm just a messenger guy," he says. "The teachings don't come from me. They come through me. And I'm a damn good translator. I can translate the message of the masters so that they're acceptable and understandable to intelligent people in a post-industrial era." Drifting through life. But in his early 20s, Rao says he was rebelling against everything that I'd grown up with, my traditions, my mother, and all the rest of that. I thought it was all mumbo-jumbo and useless. In 1972, after earning an undergraduate degree in physics and an MBA in India, Rao moved to New York City to earn a PhD in marketing at Columbia Business School. "I was drifting," he says. "I was allowing life to unfold. I didn't have any strong notions that this was what I wanted." While at Columbia, Rao met Ram Dass, an American spiritual teacher who then lived near campus. "I'm tremendously grateful to Ram Dass because, in a real sense, he gave my culture back to me. He enabled me to say, no, this is not useless. In fact, this is priceless and is part of my heritage, so I ought to examine it more." While he had a good experience at Columbia, Rao found that much of what he was studying for his PhD in marketing was pointless and even worthless. Still, he earned his degree and began his marketing career at Warner Communications. There, he helped create the advertising strategy for the 1973 blockbuster film The Exorcist. His contribution? The iconic image of a man with a hat and a briefcase standing before a half-open door and casting a long shadow. The success of that movie catapulted his career, but he quickly became burned out by corporate politics. Rao pivoted and went into academia, but the feeling of burnout persisted. Rao immersed himself in spiritual and mystical readings that would take him to a wonderful place, but he found returning to the real world was a letdown. "I remember feeling all of this is useful only if you're sitting quietly, thinking peaceful thoughts, but not in the hurly-burly of life," he says. "But somehow I knew that wasn't true. Somehow I knew it was very valuable. I just hadn't figured out how to make use of it." Changing lives. Rao came up with the idea of taking the teachings of great masters, stripping them of religious and cultural connotations, and adapting them to be relatable in modern days. He designed a course called Creativity and Personal Mastery. "That effort made me come alive," Rao recalls. "Initially, I felt like a fraud because I was creating a course on how you can make use of these concepts, and I hadn't figured out how to make use of them myself." While the class was offered through Columbia Business School, where he was teaching, students from across the university enrolled in it. "I stated right in the syllabus that this course will profoundly change your life. If it doesn't, we have both failed," he says. People were initially skeptical, but later said, "Oh my God, this is true. It does change lives." They moved from being skeptical to believers, and quite a few became evangelists. He went on to teach the course at other prestigious business schools like Kellogg, Berkeley, and the London Business School. The course was featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Business Week, Time, Virtually every major business publication in the UK and North America covered it, he says. Once Rao decided to teach the course privately, he founded the Rao Institute. Gradually, I morphed into coaching, but I never set out to be a coach, he says. People just heard about me and said, hey, I want to work with you. He only works with successful, highly driven people, typically senior executives and entrepreneurs who, Rao says, want to have an outsized impact on the world, but also have a spiritual bent. They know that life is about more than getting the biggest or the most expensive toys, and they want to bring that spiritual understanding into every facet of their lives, including their business. The spiritual teachings he brings to his clients are still relevant today, he says, because the human condition hasn't changed. In 5,000 years, we've advanced tremendously materially, technologically, in every way you can think of, but our fundamental nature has not changed. The things that bothered people at the time of Jesus, the time of Buddha, and before are still the things bothering people now. His message? It's the message of the great masters. I've changed the examples. I've converted many of them into exercises, and I use language that the persons in my milieu, major corporations, entrepreneurial companies, business schools, can accept and feel comfortable with. The teachings are not mine. I just put them in a form people can understand and relate to. It's an immensely practical approach to the manifold problems they are facing. To learn more about Sri Kumar Rao, Srikumarao, visit therauinstitute.com. And from the same issue, an article by Amy Pacherell, The Healing Power of Awe, How One Woman Found Comfort and Connection in Moments of Awe. From the time I was a little girl, I have sought comfort and solace in the expansiveness of nature. I've scoured beaches for seashells and colorful rocks, lain beneath the night sky marveling at the stars, and planted myself at the base of a giant oak tree in the front yard of my childhood home, notebook in hand, recording my thoughts. Now a mother to three boys, I try to instill that same sense of wonder in my children during monthly hikes up to a cross in the mountains near our home. Once, my 8-year-old son Jack suggested we find unique rocks to place in a wooden box that rests at the base of the cross. We can leave them as an offering, a prayer for joy, love, and peace, he said. We each selected one rock, then opened the box. Inside, we saw letters, book pages, even a pair of black horn-rimmed eyeglasses, people's prayers for guidance, peace, and clarity, and we placed our rocks alongside them, connecting our prayers to theirs. As we made our way back down the hill, we saw a trio of hummingbirds dancing around us. Jack's eyes followed the tiny, flitting creatures, his mouth curled into a slight grin. We were both mesmerized. We already got our blessings, he said. Joy, love, peace. It turns out, such quests for awe are on the rise, particularly in response to a growing body of evidence linking awe with myriad health benefits, including lower levels of stress, enhanced well-being, and greater social connectedness. In fact, when people experience awe, they report feeling more connected to other people and the world at large. There's even a growing movement through an online platform called the Awe Collective, awe.arizona.edu. To gather, connect, and map moments of awe and cultivate a community rooted in creative expression and childlike wonder. Awe explained. So, what is awe, really? It's difficult to put the experience into words, even for scientists and writers. I can't articulate what was happening in my body and mind while those hummingbirds danced before my eyes. Some call awe a nebulous emotion. Others say it's a sense of wonder about the world around us. Perhaps the most accepted definition of awe, though, is the experience of something mysterious or beyond words, something larger than yourself. It's a palpable and visceral feeling of emotional intenseness that is alluring and often ineffable, a feeling of holy otherness characterized by vastness which evokes spaciousness, openness, the imagination, and wonder, says Helen Marlowe, PhD, Dean of the School of Psychology at Notre Dame de Namur University. You can feel awe when noticing the fractals in a leaf or watching the sunlight ripple across the water. You can feel it just by noticing what you notice and focusing on things that make you feel peaceful, calm, and connected. If you've hiked the Great Smoky Mountains, watched the sky transformed into a canvas of breathtaking hues as the sun dips below the horizon, or felt your skin prickle with goosebumps after witnessing a heroic act of kindness, You know what it means to experience awe. It's the emotion you encounter in response to something so vast, so full of wonder, that your sense of self recedes into the background. In a 2022 study published in Emotion, researchers of 52 people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s discovered that those who were instructed to cultivate awe, to pay attention to details and view their surroundings with childlike eyes during 15-minute daily walks, became more skilled at discovering and amplifying awe. Awe walkers also reported a greater sense of well-being and social connectedness than those who weren't told to focus on awe. But the most surprising finding, according to study author Virginia Sturm, Ph.D., an associate professor of neurology at the University of California in San Francisco, was the marked differences in the group's selfies. During the 8-week study, the awe participants' photos revealed a visible shift. They focused less on themselves and more on the landscape around them. In other words, their selfies became smaller while the world grew larger. At the same time, all participants who appeared happier, their smiles more intense as the study progressed. The images I snapped during my morning hikes with my son reveal a similar pattern. We became smaller while the focus on the birds in the background, the cross, and the cloud-filled sky became more prominent. I was capturing awe on camera without even realizing it. The science of awe. Even back in the late 1800s, pioneers in psychology were well aware of the power of awe. Unfortunately, without technology like functional magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, or even heart rate monitors to produce scientifically sound data, their theories didn't gain much traction. Today, research shows that our bodies react differently in response to awe than to emotions like surprise or joy. We make different sounds and facial expressions. Awe puts daily stressors into perspective, boosts creativity, and enhances mood. Studies show that awe can help calm the nervous system, reduce inflammation, and bring people together through a shared sense of community. While scientists aren't entirely clear how awe-filled experiences produce these effects, they do have a few theories. Awe seems to deactivate the default mode network, the part of your brain that chatters in the background during your daily activities. It stimulates the vagus nerve, an information superhighway in the brain that not only regulates heart rate, digestion, and respiration, but also halts inflammation and unlocks the relaxation response. And preliminary studies suggest that awe triggers the release of feel-good chemicals, including oxytocin, helping people feel more cooperative and generous. There's incredible openness and freedom that happens when you view yourself as a small part of a much larger picture, Marlowe says. During our hikes, when my boys and I see ourselves as a speck of dust in an expansive universe, we're humbled by our smallness. But we also have the sense of being part of something that's larger than life, and it's compounded by our togetherness. Sturm says that makes sense. In fact, the most awe-filled experiences often happen in concert with other people. Maybe you're at a show belting out a favorite song alongside thousands of strangers in a massive concert venue. Or maybe you're cheering for a favorite team at a sporting event. Or maybe, like me and my family, you're doing a slow-motion wave at a Harlem Globetrotters event in a stadium of hundreds. There's something awesome about being part of a larger collective movement. Scientists call this sense of awe in numbers collective effervescence, moving in unison with other people. And research shows that when we walk, dance, sing, pray, or meditate in unison, our neurons begin firing in similar patterns. Hormones like cortisol, oxytocin, and dopamine begin syncing up, and there's a certain synergy and energy in the group collective. Add it all together, and it seems few things are better for mind, body, and soul than a hefty dose of awe. Cultivating awe. Many people think awe is reserved for the natural wonders of the world, things like watching an eclipse, standing on the rim of the Grand Canyon, or swimming in the Dead Sea. But Sturm tells me that awe can happen anywhere and everywhere, such as seeing flowers blooming through cracks in a sidewalk, or hearing your child laugh just like your mother. Awe doesn't even have to be physical. It can be conceptual. Maybe you're reading a novel and marveling at the writer's immense talent, looking at an impressive painting, or considering how big data, algorithms, and artificial intelligence are impacting our world. Anything that blows your mind can be an awesome experience. Practicing awe is a skill, just like anything else, Marlowe says. The good news? Having awe experiences inspires more awe. That has certainly been my experience. My boys and I continue to hike up our favorite mountain as often as we can, choosing a different path to the cross during every trek. We notice the colors in the sky, the formation of the clouds, the way the leaves swirl in the breeze, and of course, the birdsong performing background music for our journey. During a recent hike when we arrived at the cross, a hawk swooped down and circled right above us. He's circling around us not because he's looking for prey, but because he's circling around our prayer, Jack said. I marveled not just at the hawk, but also at my son, who uncovered a truism I'm only beginning to grasp. Wherever you are, there's your awe. You just have to open your eyes and mind to see it. Want to maximize the awe in your life? Try these five strategies. Power down your screens. IMAX films aside, people are more likely to experience awe when they're away from devices and are instead connecting with other people. Do something different. Sturm tells me that we're more likely to feel awe in environments that are unfamiliar, which could be as simple as taking a different route to work. Step out in nature. Nature is one of the most common catalysts for experiencing awe. It provides both physical and emotional benefits and helps people feel more spiritually connected. Practice mindfulness. Mindfulness helps us focus on the present moment and silences distractions. Pay attention to what your senses are noticing and hone in on what you're feeling. And you will rediscover the world around you with childlike eyes. Stick with it. Quiet the cognitive chatter of trying to process your experience as you're having it, and instead, just stay in the moment. We pause for a moment to remind you that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, 24 hours of programming from over 300 publications. And you are currently listening to the Philosopher Program with your host, Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Candy Lewis. And you can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. We return now to the Great Awakening, our prophesied transformation, and the attainment of embodied enlightenment by Mike Dooley in conversation with six renowned channels. And we had just started Chapter 4, The Role Love Plays in Self-Realization, with Matt Kahn. And Matt is an incomparable spiritual teacher, highly attuned empathic healer, powerful speaker, and captivating author. He enriches people's lives by providing heart-centered solutions that ignite, delight, and unite. Matt wrote the highly acclaimed books, Whatever Arises, Love That, Everything is Here to Help You, featured in the Be Kind box by Ellen DeGeneres, and The Universe Always Has a Plan, which has been translated into more than a dozen languages. His newest book, All for Love, The Transformative Power of Holding Space, won a Gold Independent Publisher Book Award and an Omni Award, World Vision category, and is topping bestseller lists. Matt has become a YouTube sensation with his healing and often humorous videos. With more than 22 million YouTube channel views, followers are finding relief from the challenges of daily life through his messages of love. Among his honors, Matt was named one of the top 100 most spiritually influential living people by Watkins Mind Body Spirit magazine, alongside the Dalai Lama and Eckhart Tolle. Prelude, non-trance channeling. Mike. Hi, Matt. We're honored to have you with us. Before we begin, can you explain a little bit about your method or style of channeling? So good to be with you again, Mike. Going way back when I was a kid, I'd say things that just kind of jumped out of me, and it would feel like someone else was talking through me. It wasn't until my late teens that my guides started speaking to me. The first thing they said was, "You're not who you think you are." My response was, "Who the hell are you?" I've continued to have these very matter-of-fact conversations with guides, archangels, and ascended masters on my very progressive path of awakening. These become both my initiation into being a channel and my indoctrination for the journey I'd be taking people on. It was a surprising turn of events. Suddenly, I was this spiritual guide talking to ascended masters. I asked them every question I could think of, sometimes repeating the same question just to see if their answers would change. Not only did they remain consistent, but everything always felt loving, safe, and all about unity consciousness. For a long time, I remained skeptical. I wanted to connect with my guides, but there was a part of me that was afraid I was making it up. I didn't want to force or fake anything. There eventually came a time when trust was established, and I was told that I would be transmitting healing energy. I said, "I don't want to step aside and let someone or something else talk through me." They said, "Well, then you're going to have to go through a journey of integration and healing to be an embodied channel." This excited me. The idea of creating a lifelong compendium of work on myself, serving as a model for what I was teaching, making myself the open space where this energy could flow, while being myself and becoming one with what I was accessing. Just having the universe on speed dial would have been cool enough, but there was also a part of me that wanted my life to be a full commitment to my work. I've developed an ability to transmit healing energy, foster awakening, and help people embody the kind of knowing that will make lasting changes. It's my deepest desire to help people awaken to their highest capacity and to know the true magic of the universe that resides in us all. I teach ideas I've never known before. I can literally go on stage, cold, and like everyone in the audience, I'm hearing what's being said for the very first time. I'm aware of the channeled words pouring through me. It's not something I come up with ahead of time and then share, which is fine, but that's not my process. I might know a little bit about what I'm going to teach, like today, awakening, yet I'm not choosing the words. My words choose me. The truth is, every one of us channels on some level. Most people, however, are only channeling their egos instead of manifesting, embodying, and channeling their soul. The ego, higher self, spirit guides, and soul. Mike. Do you ever have an egoic conversation with your guides? Does your ego talk to them and then there's an exchange of ideas? There are moments when I realize my ego is getting agitated. Normally, I'm very clear in my decision-making. I always know exactly what I need or want to do in any given moment. In the odd moments when I waver, thinking to myself, maybe this or maybe that, I realize my egoic operating system is being activated. I may honor it because the ego is necessary to a degree. I just have to be careful because it comes down to how transparent or dense its motivation is. The density of someone's ego is always reflecting the amount of psychic protection they think they need. A lot of people express themselves through an embellished personality because to them, it creates safety. It's when we're liberated beings, however, awakened in the oneness of truth, that we don't require as much protection. Then our ego can shrink and be transparent, and we can become a vessel of individual expression for source energy. I don't require a lot of protection, so it doesn't flare up that much. But when it does, I usually find it ruminating over some choice until I laugh and move on with my day. Thankfully, with the channel and the connection to the universe that I have, everything is very clear, very definitive, and very simple. And that's how I'm used to living my life. Mike, you don't feel the ego trying to claw its way back? No. In fact, I think that one of the reasons the ego does that is because we as human beings have to learn about our boundaries. A lot of people are still caught in a pattern of trying to be all things to all people, trying to present the most likable, lovable version of themselves to others, which is great, but then we don't always act in a space of true authenticity. For example, if you need space to recharge, but you're afraid to upset someone or think they'll abandon you, then you're going to overgive. That's going to lead to depletion, exhaustion, and resentment. So when the ego flares up, it's often acting on behalf of consciousness to either remind us of a boundary we don't know how to create or an imbalance that we're overlooking. When we're living in a place of true autonomy and a place of true sovereignty, we're unconditionally loving and valuing our own time. Then we can share space with people without an overgiving that's going to deplete us or leave us feeling resentful. This kind of lesson, along with many others, constitutes the evolution of our spirits in these human bodies. In other words, awakening. Mike, how do you begin to distinguish between the voice of ego versus higher self? How did you experience this evolution? I started to notice within me, and for a lot of other people too, that when ego arises, there's often an element of time involved. For example, the ego uses cause and effect, superstition, manipulation, or ultimatums as a time-based device to create pressure. When it's your ego masquerading as intuition, it'll say you need to make this decision by this moment, or else you're either going to miss out on something amazing or something catastrophically horrible is going to happen. When we get into this kind of ultimatum-like conversation, it's actually our ego masquerading as our highest wisdom. The ego's not trying to hurt anyone. It's saying, look, you like to give your attention to spiritual things, so I'm going to dress up as your spiritual guide because I want some attention. It's like a kid saying, hey, Dad likes football. He watches it all the time. So I'm going to put on a football uniform and maybe Dad will give me more of his attention. I've also found that when it's our ego at play, we tend to think we know more about other people than they know about themselves. When it's your soul, however, your awareness is about you and you alone. Other people are the mystery. You're the subject of self-awareness and self-responsibility. That's a big one. Mike, do you feel it's your soul that comes through? I think of one's soul as a unique extension of the totality of Source, the way in which Source expresses itself through an individual. We could also say that the wisdom of soul accesses is your higher self. I use these terms interchangeably. Then I have spirit guides I work with, which is not unusual. If you look at the Hindu religion, for example, you'll find a variety of gods and goddesses who are simply unique expressions of the divine. I find that our guides are simply individual attributes of our soul who offer wisdom from the higher self. This is also part of our awakening, bringing the wisdom of your higher self into your body to influence your language patterns and choices, to literally manifest spirit into your form. The call to awaken. The question is, how far will one go in their journey? How much are they willing to dedicate themselves to the opportunity of allowing more truth into their life? Maybe we've had successes in our lives, maybe disappointments. But to go farther, there comes a point where we say, I'm less seduced by personal gain and less fixated with the fear of personal loss, and I am ready to allow the divine to work its most incredible magic through me, expressing its highest will for the benefit of this planet. When we get to a place where we want to connect with something higher than gain and loss, and something more relevant and real than fear, superstition, and anticipation, it's because we're going through an awakening of consciousness that allows us to be vessels of spirit instead of just reflections of spirit's potential. Set an intention. Now, as you're following this, I'd like you to set a private intention for this transmission, because I want you and your guides to be a part of this co-creation. We'll be collaborating on transmitting a healing energy that fosters your most profound awakening. In honor of that, please take this moment to set your intention for what you hope to receive. For example, I wish for it to help me heal, awaken, integrate, embody, feel safe, be more connected to my own psychic messages and guides, or all of the above. You don't have to pick one. You can name as many as you want. Take a moment. How will you direct this energy so that we can awaken and heal as one? The role love plays in self-realization. The divine feminine. Throughout history, every being that has ever awakened to a higher truth has satisfied an intention of the universe, which was to create worlds where it incarnates as an individual, only to grow and experience the expansion of each along their journey, to satisfy its curiosity and know itself at the deepest levels. The more the universe wakes up within each of us, the more the universe expands as a whole, because reality is made from the fabric of an all-loving intelligence. In the beginning of the journey, and what we would think of as the traditions of awakening and healing, we've been taught from a very masculine standpoint. Yet, because we've now reached a very pivotal time in history, often referred to as our ascension, the universe wants to remember itself in a way it never has. This ascension represents a returning of equal power for the masculine and feminine, an energetic balance within each human being. The more balanced, the more harmonious their external reality, ultimately raising the vibration of the planet, reversing the karmic wheel and global warming, creating a more sustainable world, and manifesting heaven on earth. The divine feminine is all about love. The divine masculine is all about truth. True awakening is the marriage of both. When we love truth more than staying safe in fear-based avoidance, and when the truth of love calls more greatly to our hearts than looking for things to fixate on or avoid. I came into this journey not having studied the masculine teachings of awakening, but by actually experiencing the awakening of truth, the realization of a higher power that lives as you in oneness. What I noticed about the masculine aspects of awakening, in the absence of the feminine, is that it can sometimes make some truths seem more unreal or illusory, i.e., less relevant. This happens because it's the feminine that arouses the truth of love. The truth of love offers more of an expanded field of view. Within the divine feminine, you know all is one, and that no matter how anybody behaves, we're all expressions of divinity. We're able to make personal decisions about our boundaries and no longer be accomplices to crimes committed against us. We're able to do this so skillfully with love as our guide, saying, I can choose and hold space for my own sovereignty without disturbing or disrespecting the divinity in another, even when someone else's divinity may be so difficult to see due to their traumas and patterns at play. When the divine feminine starts to arise within us, we start to realize love is a higher force. In fact, it's the highest vibration. You will embody it as your own highest vibration, depending upon how much time and how much of your life you give to it. The divine masculine. Typically, in our unconscious world, The masculine awakens well before the feminine. So we often perceive love as a reward for good behavior and something to withhold as a way of punishing those that are acting from a lesser aspect of themselves. Many children have experienced love in a disciplinary fashion. On a spiritual level, we don't necessarily love in exchange for experiences we prefer and like. We love as a way of saying, I am so inspired by the amount of pain I sense in this person, which I don't necessarily have to feel, that I can acknowledge it as their influence to act from their least redeemable aspects of character. Whenever someone's acting from their ego, it's because they're hiding in pain and feel unsafe. I'm not going to withdraw my love as a way of trying to discipline them. I'm going to hear their cry for love and offer what they need to heal so that they will no longer be taken advantage of and can be liberated from their plight of pain. When the divine feminine wakes up, love is what we offer to ourselves and to every human being. We learn the difference between I love you as a soul and I cannot tolerate your egoic mistreatment of me and others. Love is a way to balance out the masculine drive for truth. Otherwise, the masculine is only driven to explore truth, wandering around looking for its long-lost love, the divine feminine. Uniting our divine energies. In awakening, we're uniting the masculine and the feminine. It's very interesting to state it this way because very commonly, in the early stages of awakening, people adopt spiritual egos. Spirituality becomes another mask along the way. People trying to stand for a higher truth get so attached to it, they misunderstand people who see things differently. They may hide behind keyboards and be so into some political or philosophical truth that they fail to treat others with kindness. When we awaken to love, we can stand for a truth that does not lower the standard of our character. We can represent a truth that does not require us to disrespect the sovereignty of any human being. And even when we're disrespected by others, we don't have to tolerate mistreatment when we're existing in a state of love. Neither does it touch, harm, or hurt us when we are whole as the love that we are. I share this with you as I'm channeling, but also as a person. I can reflect on my life and how it changed when love woke up within me, when I realized the role love plays in healing and awakening, and how it is all part of the same journey. We have to emotionally nourish ourselves with all the things the past seemed to withhold from us. We need to give ourselves the love that we wish we had more of from our parents. Maybe we were loved by a parent who died unexpectedly, and so we felt like the love left with them, and we're grieving. Or sometimes people may have said, I love you, while they did very unloving things, leaving us to distrust love. The question is, can we start to become the open space, the receivers, for love to wake up? Can we begin giving ourselves everything we need that seemed to be withheld in the past? Because when we give each wound the love that it lacked, or the love it didn't remember receiving, or the love that was absent during a moment of trauma or mistreatment, we bring to that memory the wholeness and completion of all experiences, which gives that memory permission to dissolve at a cellular level, return to the light, and transmute. Transmuting trauma. So we can either mentally process our wounds, maybe comparing how our relationship ending reflects on our mom and dad's relationship, or psychoanalyze anything else until the end of time, which is the traditional path of the masculine, or we can embrace a more unified, new paradigm approach, choosing to emotionally process our trauma. Either way, we must emotionally process our wounds to find the relief we seek. Mentally processing is, this happened, this also happened. What's the relationship? Emotional processing is acknowledging that whatever feeling I'm having is a part of a cellular memory trying to complete its journey and return home to the light. If I can allow the feeling to be felt, if I can accept that it's part of my highest path and give it the love it doesn't remember receiving from the past, even if the love I give it doesn't change how I feel, I'm now helping a part of me reach a journey of completion. I'm helping another memory or cluster of emotions transmute back into light. The entire awakening process is literally the embodiment of alchemy, transmuting trauma and returning it to light. Only love can do that. Even as we sit here, together, maybe with our hands over our hearts, whatever we're feeling is the way we're meant to feel right now. What love would tell you, as I'm telling you, is that there's no reason for sad to be anything other than sad. Instead, just be the love that holds the sadness until it's ready to let go. There's no reason to make fear anything other than being afraid. We're not here to transform fear into love. We're here to love the one who's afraid. When I wrote Whatever Arises, Love That, there were people who thought I was trying to say, oh, this person betrayed me. I'm supposed to love that. Not my point. That is referring to the invitation to feel and free that which was blocked or resisted. So it's not my partner betrayed me and I love that, or I should love it to make sure it doesn't happen in the future, which is more superstition. Instead, I say, if I can feel how traumatizing it is to be betrayed, don't I deserve more love, not less, right now? If I can acknowledge how much love I deserve, can I focus more on giving myself the love that I desire, not focus and fixate on what someone did to me? Which doesn't mean that, from time to time, if someone does something egregious, you refrain from acting. It may require legal intervention or bringing someone to justice for a crime they've committed. We can follow through on whatever process of justice is required to ensure that more people won't be harmed in the way you may have been hurt. But we don't have to do it with a grudge in our heart. We don't have to match someone's karmic patterning by building more karma within ourselves. Karma is not about doing the wrong thing, but unintentionally building more walls within yourself during your journey. We want walls to come down with every step we take, not have new ones go up. And what keeps the walls down, what keeps the heart bursting open, and what allows you to truly taste the gravity of your own immortality is how much of yourself you hand over to love, living a life of giving yourself to love. When we don't give ourselves to love, we live an endless negotiation with the universe and our imagination, intending and believing that everything has to go a certain way, overlooking the fact that the universe has a plan for us and that we are co-creators on this journey with very important roles. Don't compete with the universe. Harmonize with it. The way you harmonize in oneness with the universe is by joining it in adoring and loving yourself the way it always has and always will. The universe is having a profound experience knowing itself as you. Your separation from it is only the distance between how you see yourself and how the universe sees you. The universe sees you as a magnificent creation. If you see yourself less than that, you'll feel separate from Source. The question is, how do we bridge the gap and become one with the universe? By learning to see ourselves from a higher level of worth and esteem. Well, how do we do that without pretending or being inauthentic? We love the parts of ourselves that can't yet see how they're simply reflections of our own unprocessed pain. This is not where we hide in high vibration to outrun low vibration. This is not where we give spiritual interpretations of reward and punishment or think that the universe works in any cause and effect way. This is where we unleash the magnificence of our own eternal light. In order for you to know how brightly you're shining and transforming this world, you have to turn that light onto yourself and taste the gravity of your own radiance. It can be intimidating. It's very intimate. Yet the ego has nothing to control in intimacy. The ego also faces the ironic predicament of developing subconscious fears for the things it desires. So while the ego seeks to fulfill a desire, it's also building a fear over its arrival. Like when people fixate on trying to find their soulmate and go on first dates filled with anxiety. Embodied love. Love is what helps us balance everything out. Love is what grounds us. Love is what fosters expansion. Love is what allows us to attract experiences, receive them, and step fully into them without running towards something that we're going to run away from the moment it shows up. Love makes everything right. Love brings wholeness to the planet, and love is the very force that heals and awakens all human beings. Again, how much of your life are you willing to hand over to love? How much of yourself will open to let love in? We answer these questions by getting to know love, and by getting to know love as who we are, not love as a manipulative force that makes your experiences change, or as a love that is only present when you're feeling elated versus defeated. It's a love that is the very support that holds you in your greatest moment of triumph or your deepest moment of heartbreak. Love is the very breath you breathe. Love is the eternal support of Source energy. The more we love ourselves, the more we're able to love others, the more we're able to see others from the most innocent perspective, and the more we call forward only the versions of other people that match the love we've given to ourselves. Love happens to be our most intrinsic form of psychic protection. It's the very identity of your essential nature. There's no wound love can't heal, and there will never be an evolution of consciousness where love is not at the forefront as the central focus of spiritual expansion, like right now. We're currently living in a world that's going through a revelation of expanded consciousness, just beginning to glimpse and taste a remembrance of unity, a remembrance that love is for everyone. Soon we'll no longer live in a world where everyone is trying to hide love for themselves out of the fear of not having enough or of missing out on experiences we've always meant to have. Love is an act of service. Love is not just where we embrace people for the decompartmentalized experiences we wish to have with them. It's an honor we bestow on all that says, I will receive you, I will honor you, and I will care for you in the name of love. Soon we'll be living in an interdependent reality of unity consciousness, no longer making decisions only for our own personal gain or to avoid any degree of personal loss. Instead, we'll be making decisions that are always good for the totality of life, including ourselves, living in a sustainable level of consciousness, a level of consciousness I call village consciousness. We live in a world, but the world is truly a collection of villages that will begin to thrive when we individually live for the well-being of each other. This is something we've lost sight of. As we accelerate the expansion of consciousness, we help run out the clock of unconsciousness and will literally speed up the fabric of time by how often and authentically we love ourselves and each other. Because in the connection of light that is a unity binding us as one, when I love myself, I help heal the world. And when I help heal the world, I transform myself. Even if you thought, I'm not interested in helping the world heal, just by loving yourself, you would transform yourself, and therefore, you would transform the world. Well, we come now to the end of our program. We will continue, of course, in the coming weeks with this book, and next week with more from Matt Kahn and his channeling. And Mike will be asking questions that he'll answer. But for now, I wish you a joyous, peaceful, and beautiful new week, and I look forward to being with you next time on our Philosopher Program.